Hello out there, and welcome to IMPACT, the official podcast of Drexel University School of Education's Education Doctorate Program. I'm Dr. Deanna Hill, here with my podcasting partner, Dr. Stephanie Smith-Budai, and we're pleased to have Dr. Ron Silvis join us today on IMPACT. Dr. Silvis is director of the Center for Teaching and Learning with Stevens Institute of Technology in New Jersey. We're very excited to have Dr. Silvis as a guest today to learn about the impact that his Drexel EdD has had on his leadership and scholarship. So, Dr. Silvis, tell us about what you've been up to professionally since you graduated with your EdD in the Educational Leadership and Management from Drexel.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. And I absolutely appreciate the opportunity to come back and collaborate and work with Drexel. My experience was second to none. So any opportunity to come back into the Drexel community is great. So for me, I graduated in 2016. So it's been a few years now, and it's been a whirlwind. When I was finishing up my EdD, I was a K-12 teacher teaching secondary social studies in a suburban Pittsburgh school district. As I was completing my dissertation, I was able to move into higher ed, and I was hired as a curriculum manager at the CUNY School of Medicine. So going from middle school teaching to a curriculum manager at a medical school in New York City, right as I was working on and finishing that dissertation. And since then, I've had an opportunity to really use my doctorate work at Drexel, and it really made an impact on me, particularly from the standpoint of leadership and change and so on and so forth. So when I started at CUNY, the school had been around for a while, but we were officially going through and seeking accreditation for the first time. So with that came a lot of revising the curriculum, changing the curriculum, and myself having to work with faculty on their teaching practices. And at that time, it was from a curriculum mapping standpoint and objectives. So really getting medical faculty who had been doing things for a long time to change. And from there, that springboarded my career to being named as the founding director of curriculum at a second medical school in New Jersey, where at the time, when I started, we had zero students. We had four faculty members. I was brought in November, and we were launching a brand new medical school from scratch. So it was interesting because I remembered back to some of Dr. Gould's classes in my first year of the program, where we designed and developed schools from scratch as if we were able to do it. And I was actually able to get the opportunity to do that and put that into practice, which is a tremendous training ground for me to be able to do that. And having been there for 4 years and ushered through our first group of students and seeing two classes through graduation, I then had the opportunity to most recently come over to Stevens, where once again at a four-year school, kind of more in my wheelhouse, away from the specialized school. But as the director of the Teaching and Learning Center, I'm now able to focus on three different buckets. I work with our faculty on their teaching and learning practices on pedagogy, and that includes classroom observations, developing a PhD course for PhD students that want to go into teaching and into educational faculty. We then have an educational research branch where we assist faculty on seeking grants, writing proposals. And then we have a dual enrollment program in our community outreach where we bring in high schools and work with the high school students to have those students come onto campus and take engineering courses and the likes. And all the while also teaching in education, my old wheelhouse at Rutgers. I adjunct as a professor in a pedagogy course there as well. So it's been busy. Thanks, Drexel.
Wow, yes, very busy. And even within the center, you're doing, you said three, but I think you named four or five different buckets.
Yeah, there's three branches and several buckets within those branches. So, but I have an associate director, which helps. So
nice. Continue to do the good work. So right. As you are aware, the Drexel EdD in Educational Leadership and Management is designed to prepare scholarly practitioners to identify and address problems of practice in their own professional context. So what made the Drexel EdD appealing to you, and what were you looking for in a doctoral program when you decided on Drexel?
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I trying to reflect back to 2013, I think it was when I started, you know, at the time, I was teaching middle school. I was coaching two sports. I was a competitive bodybuilder as well in my personal life. So there was a lot going on. So accessibility was one thing that I looked at, I knew I wanted to take that step. My dad had a doctorate in education, which he got from the University of Pittsburgh back in the 1980s. And I was at that graduation, and it was just always something that was kind of ingrained that ultimately that would be the deal. And I wanted to get into higher ed ultimately. And I knew that that was an important stepping stone to be able to make that jump. But being a full-time professional, you know, how do you find that? It was finding that program, A, that tailored to that, but then B, tailored to that and offered what I wanted in a way that I wanted, and so on and so forth. And it just so happened that, you know, I was familiar with Drexel, very familiar with the city of Philadelphia. I was in the first fully online cohort. So at that time that I was looking, Drexel had just offered the online cohort. And I had attended a couple of events to get information and to learn about it. They had a higher ed track that I was looking for. I really liked the way that the course schedule was laid out. It was very clear. And then even from Drexel's perspective in terms of how it was communicated, I always felt like there was somebody, even before I became a student, there was always somebody that I could contact that would reach out and was very responsive in terms of getting back to me information. So, you know, putting all those things together, that helped lead to making that decision. And I mean, I would never change that decision. It was one of the best decisions that I ever made. And I was fortunate, I think, being in that first online cohort and having that opportunity, because that was the other thing. I was able to collaborate and learn with and from people from all over the United States and other countries all at the same time within that cohort. So it was a very rich situation and environment for me.
That's awesome, Ron. Tell us a little bit about your dissertation research. How did you come to the problem of practice that you selected? What did you learn about it? And then what would you say has been the most significant impact of your dissertation?
Yeah, it's a huge question. And for me, growing up in Western Pennsylvania, and I had lived there my entire life, the suburban Pittsburgh area was not from my perspective, a very diverse area. And diversity and inclusion was something that was very special and very important to me. And as a teacher, one of the things that I took on was I was a detention supervisor. So I think my dissertation, and this was years before I even entered the program, but it piqued my interest. And the school district that I taught at was 90% white. But yet in detention, I just started keeping track myself personally. And 64% of the students I was seeing in detention were students of color. So it made me start to ask myself, obviously students by race or demographic aren't just naturally more misbehaving than others, et cetera, et cetera. So I asked myself these questions of, was there miscommunication? Was there misinterpretation of things that led to this? And it was furthered by many of the students that I would see in detention were also some of my athletes that I coached in football and I coached in wrestling. And I would hear kind of the stories of what really, quote unquote, happened in the classroom. And a lot of these stories were seconded and backed up by other students that were in those classes, right? So in picking those dissertation topics, I wanted to do things around, diversity. I wanted to do things around the education gaps and so on and so forth. But it was, how do you narrow it down? How do you find something to really narrow that focus? And it took me a while, but ultimately what I landed on was just that, looking at do white teachers have the ability, or how do they authentically connect with students of color in their classrooms? And do they understand what those authentic connections look like? Do they have more trouble, sub questions? Do they have a harder time creating those connections with students of color than they may with white students and so on and so forth? So, you know, I went down that road, and I will say also that the school district that I taught at was 100% white in terms of its staff, right? So. You know, it wasn't that difficult. The difficulty wasn't finding subjects, but around knowing that that was the subject matter, that might have been potentially a difficulty, but it wasn't. So, you know, in my research, looking at, cultural responsiveness and different pedagogies and pluses and minuses and authentic care and aesthetic care and those types of things, you know, I don't think it was a surprise that I found that there were cases of some teachers were able to create those connections. Others had more difficulty. Overall, you know, you saw color blindness and, teachers not aware that color blindness was a bad thing. Them thinking that it was a good thing. But I think one of the biggest impacts for me, you know, and I always thought of myself as a white male, not necessarily historically the demographic that you would think of as being, good in those areas. But in my history class, I recognized that the non-white populations were often represented in negative ways, right? So I used secondary textbooks and things that I would use in parallel with the history that I was teaching that showed those positive impacts from different things. So I saw myself as partly getting there, but the big impact was just being aware and seeing the scope and the grandeur and, you know, the need for reflection, particularly, you know, from my perspective and I guess from the white perspective, but then also looking at the need for integration of these topics and of this type of pedagogy and curriculum throughout teacher training courses, throughout first year experience courses, rather than these one-off events, and we're saying that we're being inclusive or we're being diverse, but yet we have this big one-off event, and then we're back to everything else, and it still gives off that impression of it's secondary or it's the other. So I've been fortunate in doing that research and understanding those things, that through the different things that I'm doing, many of the courses that I'm developing at the medical school and here and now at Stevens, that I'm able to really infuse those things, and they become really primary pieces of content for me. And then everything else kind of revolves around that. And in my classroom observations, there are always things that I'm looking at, different ways of representation, different ways of presenting things, so on and so forth, to continue to try to grow the understanding and the awareness. I think that's the big thing, was just knowing and trying. How do you have to make people aware and then willing and wanting to change. And I also learned greatly that it's definitely a lot of these topics, and maybe not so much, not only this one, but there really has to be a passion, and it really has to create a passion to create that sustainability to continue to progress and to continue to grow those initiatives.
Well, thank you so much for
walking. I hope that was succinct. I feel like I went all over the place, but yeah.
That was great. And I was saying, thank you for walking us through, right? Because I think a lot of students struggle with selecting a primary practice and really sticking with it and going really deep. There are so many different topics of interest, right? No. But you found something that you wanted to do, and clearly it's, had an impact. And I if it's you, I think that you did end up presenting a little bit of that at the Pennsylvania chapter of the National Association of Multicultural Education, PA NAME, when we had our conference in Westchester. So it's great that that research went beyond the dissertation as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've actually, with a colleague of mine too, we actually presented at the International NAME Conference in Phoenix, Arizona a couple of years ago about looking at ways to redesign teacher education programs with, some community elements to it and so on and so forth, piggybacking off of some of the stuff from the medical school. So yeah, NAME's it's definitely something that I was exposed to via my time at Drexel with Dr. Grant, and I've continued to carry that on for sure.
That's great. We probably came across each other. It was actually in Tucson. It was in Tucson, and I was there with Dr. Grant presenting, so we probably crossed paths somehow. It's clear that your dissertation research has had, you know, multiple significances, and it will continue on for sure. This topic is still relevant today. Absolutely. And I'm not sure when it will lose its relevancy, to be honest. This is a longer question. As you know, one of the Drexel differences is our focus on sustainable leadership, which includes understanding how systems work and coming to understand how one's own worldview, values, beliefs, and habits of mind influence one's leadership. So how did this impact the way that you see yourself within your own professional context?
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of speaks a little bit to what I alluded to at the end of the last question. For me, my dissertation work kind of was the start, and I don't know that I can necessarily separate that from what's going on now. And like I said, it's not, at least in this subject area, it's not something I think that can be faked. You're not going to have the energy for it. Through my dissertation research and my time at Drexel, I think one of the biggest takeaways, I was always pretty reflective. I was the type of person that after conversations or after things would occur, I'd be driving home or out here or, random times think, I could have said this, or maybe I should have done that, and so on and so forth. But I think my time at Drexel, it really caused me and forced me to be reflective constantly. And I think it serves a couple purposes. Number one, it's therapeutic, but then it also helps in terms of moving forward and creating growth. And when we talk about sustainability, in my roles, I use a lot of the stuff from my dissertation and a lot of my research in my daily practice. That's a given. For me, in a leadership role, especially at colleges where it's interesting, I've been in higher ed now for 8 years and I've never been in a position where there was a person there before me. All the positions I've started, created, and built and grown. And I don't know that I want to continue to do that, but it's been, I'm actually good where I'm at. But in terms of the sustainable change and sustainable leadership and getting people to alter and change, I've really had to draw on those leadership courses and the change theory courses. And for me, it's all about building relationships. It's about creating that rapport. And that comes back to the reflection of knowing and understanding who I am, what my beliefs are, what my values are, how that fits in with the greater context of everything else. And then being able to have those conversations and come in and approach with inquiry instead of coming in and approaching with advocacy. And I know that was one of the big things that I took away, and I say it all the time from the first round of courses was, coming in with inquiry as opposed to advocacy. But it's really listening and understanding and knowing that that person may approach things from a different perspective. They have different prior knowledge, they have different backgrounds, they have different experiences, and those may be different than mine, or they may have had a bad experience with a director or with somebody in my position. And that's not necessarily to be a reflection of me, but it may manifest that way. And just knowing those things going in and being able to then redirect with certain questions and learn more and try to figure out the story before jumping in with different things. And for me, that's also really helped in terms of, I mean, my training and my background is as an eighth grade social studies teacher. And I've been doing this with surgeons and geneticists and biochemists and now mechanical engineers and electrical engineers. And I don't speak those languages. But you learn the right questions to ask, and you learn how to listen, and you learn how to advocate, and you learn how to ask, you know, inquire, and then do your research, figure things out, and how to build those relationships to approach people to ultimately progress and grow the organization so that we're all benefiting from that.
So Dr. Silvis, you spoke to this a little bit earlier, but I want to ask you directly about your experiences, especially in terms of addressing issues of equity, inclusion, and social justice. It's been at the core of the EDD program. It's certainly part of the mission of the School of Education. We just recently revised our EDD keystones to make it more visible and explicit. So can you talk a little bit about how your experience as a Drexel EDD student or your dissertation research, how that's impacted your ability now to contribute to equity, social justice, and or anti-racist practices in your current professional practice?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so there are one of the biggest takeaways I think that I picked up on or uncovered. I mean, and maybe it shouldn't have been a secret, but was just the need for integrating and infusing these subjects and these topics across the board. So, you know, I'll go back to my time at the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine, which was the school that we were building when I started. And one of my first things that I was overseeing was this course that we called the Human Dimension. And what happened, you know, I'm not going to take credit for developing the course, but there were elements that I'll touch on it in a second. So the way the course worked was medical students came in and they started in July. And through community partners that we had, our students were assigned to families throughout the state of New Jersey. And they would meet with and work with those families throughout their 3 or 4 years at the School of Medicine. They would go to their homes. They would communicate with, they would talk about food deserts. They would talk about, you know, lack of resources, lack of medical care, you know, things that, when we look at underserved populations that they have. But and it was interesting because you had rural parts of New Jersey, you also had very urban parts of New Jersey. So these students were going to all these different places. And the idea was to make them more empathetic as physicians. Because I liken, from my perspective, the role, you know, you looked at teacher demographics in K-12 and, you know, you had 84-85% of the teacher demographics across the country were white, but yet our student population was over 50% that were non-white at that point, right? So getting ever more and more diverse, but yet the teacher population was not. And I see the same thing, and we're talking about the same things when it came to the medical professions as well. So that was the idea behind it, of these doctors or future doctors being able to learn these situations, to become more empathetic, to learn where their patients are coming from, which was one of the big things when we talked about authentic care and authentic teacher-student relationships, right? Where are the students coming from? What are their communities like? What are their parents like? What are they seeing? What are they learning? What are they doing before they're getting there? So, you know, things were kind of the shell of that was developed. And then I was able to help in terms of the development of the various sessions. And what we did was we infused throughout those sessions, there was opportunities first of all, it was like teaching students had to learn about, you know, social determinants of health and how different communities have been impacted. There was a historical element to it. So we infused those historical elements within the course as well. And they weren't just sessions, but each week that the class met throughout that time, a lot of these subjects came back up and were revisited. And students did community. One thing that I was able to get infused into that was to do community health fairs. So the students were able to actually not only go into the homes, but they were then put on these community fairs within the communities and making those relationships. And that's kind of piggyback to here at Stevens, where there are several initiatives that I've had to develop. I've created a teaching and learning fellowship for Stevens faculty. I'm working on a PhD course, a TA training course. And within all those courses and all those things, in conjunction with the Office of DEI, it's teaching the difference between equity and equality, right? That was one of the things that really came up in my dissertation work when I talked with the teachers. It was, I treat everybody equally. I don't see color. Well, that to them sounds like the right thing to say, but, you know, we know that everybody has different situations, different backgrounds, different experiences. So everybody needs to be treated the way they need to be treated, not all the same way. So it's teaching what that equity looks like. And another example that I'm pretty proud of that we just launched this past August with the whole School of Business, and our dean's been on board with this as well. We received a grant to create an inclusive leadership program where all incoming business school students in August, they had a full day inclusive leadership training where we looked at identity, we looked at microaggressions, it was a very foundational session where we looked at those things in the context of school, but then also as future business professionals. And we're in the process now of outlining, and we've created an inclusive leadership certification program to where students will, they're going to ultimately have a portfolio and they're going to present to the Board of Trustees, but throughout their whole time here at Stevens, they're going to be attending workshops, doing some community work and various things to attain this inclusive leadership certification. And we just actually this afternoon, we're launching that same initiative now with faculty and staff. So we're growing it across the campus community and really trying to push that and make it part of our vernacular. And that's one of the main takeaways that I experienced through Drexel and through my dissertation work, of that need to continue those conversations and to spread that and not just be one-offs and, okay, we did this, that's good. But no, it needs to really be integrated within our world, really.
That's excellent. Please let us know how it works out transitioning with the faculty, the PhD students, the TA course. I think it's important. We have a similar program right now here at Drexel too. It's a non-credit TA sort of course, but for focused on online teaching.
Well, I may contact you about that one too.
Well, no, it's through our Teaching and Learning Center. So
perfect.
You can contact your colleague.
My colleague over there. Gotcha.
Yeah, colleagues there. I'm involved with it only as a faculty mentor. So I'm mentoring two of the EDD students who are going through the program in that way. So when you were talking, it reminded me of this program that we have. So you have had a very successful career as a teacher and administrator, doing great things right now at Stevens. What would you say has been the greatest impact of the EDD specifically on your career?
So the greatest impact on me, it's unfortunate, and bear with me and I'll explain why it's unfortunate. I think it's really given me a seat at the table, and it's allowed me to open doors and walk through doors that would have not necessarily been open to me. And the reason I say that that's unfortunate, I know that there are so many more talented people and people all around that I come into contact with that haven't had the opportunity that I did through Drexel, that have the ability to do these things, and they're not getting that seat at the table. They're not able to walk through that door because they haven't been given that opportunity. So, you know, for me, it gave me the opportunity that I don't take lightly, because I feel that there's an obligation now to walk through that door and do it justice and serve properly on behalf of those who can't walk through that door or haven't had the opportunity. I shouldn't say can't, but haven't had the opportunity to walk through that door. You know, it's just to continue to strive and to continue to fight. And I think that the work ethic I gained at Drexel, I think the relationships I've gained at Drexel, I mean, Dr. Grant was my dissertation chair, and if we go a month without it shooting a message off here or there or whatnot, that rarely happens. You know, I still come across things that I remember from Dr. Gould's class, and I'll shoot something off to him, or, you know, Dr. Alan Grant, who was in charge of the program when I was through, still in contact with him where he's at. Many of my colleagues that went through my cohort that we still keep in contact. And it's that ability to build that network and create that network, and, you know, hopefully and ideally everybody is on the same page and using those resources to push agendas and get initiatives out there and build that support and, you know, grow things from the grassroots all the way out to make an impact and make a difference on the communities that we come from.
That's exciting. And you've accomplished so much already, all the things that you have in the works, really amazing. But I guess tell us about what's next for you professionally. Where do you see yourself 5 years from now, and what additional impact would you like to have on society?
Great question. So, I truly feel that I've landed in a place that I enjoy. It's a very community-based environment. It's a great work environment. It's a very open and receptive environment, which, you know, for a lot of the things that I'm doing that I'm speaking about, you need to have that receptivity, right? You don't want walls to be put up, and that's not to say that everybody's receptive, but I feel that I'm in a good place. So, you know, and I've been here almost a year. There's a lot of building right now. It's a lot of building. It's a lot of growing. So I see myself over the next 5 years of really building out those programs, fine-tuning them, getting them in a good space and in a good place, and then, you know, cultivating that. At the same time, looking for additional avenues and inroads to jump into. You know, beyond that, I like I said, Stevens, I feel is a place that I can grow and that I can, you know, it's interesting. I talked about the degree and opening up doors and things like that. I think one of the things in this environment that's encouraging is the letters at the end of your name aren't the be all end all here, as I see promotions and movement of people. So, you know, I just see myself in a good place to be able to grow within the university community, you know, make it that home. And that was one of the interesting things that I didn't, when I moved from K-12 to higher ed, it's one of the things I didn't count for, right? As a K-12 teacher, you know, I lived in the same community that I taught. Like I said, I coached multiple sports. It really is an environment, a family type environment, right? You know, everybody, you can't go anywhere without seeing people. And you move into higher ed and it's the complete opposite. You have colleagues and you have peers that you associate with, but it's just different. And this is a nice, it's a nice happy medium, I think, between the two. So I see myself growing here, you know, potentially, you know, I'm in the provost's office right now, my department. So hopefully growing in that capacity to be able to effectively create positive change throughout the university and then, you know, beyond if we can do so.
Right. Well, thank you so much for sharing the impact that the EDD has had on your professional practice and your future plans. We have a few lighter questions if you have time.
Sure.
All right. So if you could only choose one, what superpower would you select?
I always ask students this. Invisibility. Everybody says fly. I'd be invisible. I can get on planes. If I'm invisible, I can fly wherever. I just think it'd be cool. There's so many places I'd like to go and just sit there and listen to what's going on and listen to conversations. So I'd be invisible and just go learn things and listen to what's going on.
That's great. I love the learning aspect and also the idea that you can transfer some of these superpowers if you were invisible. That's awesome. So I know this might not be easy to respond to on the spot, but how would you describe your perfect day?
My perfect day. Oh, man. You know, I mean, so my perfect day has probably changed, Reese. So I have a 3-year-old who I wasn't even thought of or in the works when I was going through the program and when I finished the program or any of that stuff. So, you know, the perfect day would probably literally be us either at the beach or at aquarium. He's all about animals and fish and sharks and all that kind of stuff. Hearing the laughter and the excitement in his voice as he sees different things or plays in the sand or, hey, daddy, daddy, come. And not having to check an email or go here or having time restraints, just time stops and we're just able to get in that bubble and, you know, hear and do those types of things.
Is it only real sharks or also baby sharks?
We like baby sharks. I think we're growing out of the baby shark thing a little.
Okay.
Bit,
but that's good. That's a good. No,
it's every weekend. Can we go see the sharks, the fish, and the turtles at the aquarium all the time? So yeah,
it's good. All right, and then last question: what has been the best live performance you have seen? So whether it's a concert, play, poetry, any live performance.
And I think about this. From time to time, and it's crazy because my musical taste is all over the place. I've seen the Wailers, Bob Marley's band a dozen times. You know, absolutely amazing. I've seen Jay-Z 5-6 times. Honestly, I might have to bring it back to Philly though. If we're talking best performance, seeing Pink do it live was an absolute event. So I'll keep it in Philly and, you know, a show with Pink performing was something to see for sure.
I always forget that was she from the Harrisburg area?
Somewhere out that way.
Great. Well, it was a pleasure having EDD alumnus Dr. Ron Silvis on Impact today. Thank you so much for sharing with us. We are always incredibly honored and excited to hear the amazing ways our EDD alums are having an impact in the world. Dr. Silvis' bio will be posted with the link to this episode on our EDD program website. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into Impact. We look forward to the next episode where we hear from other alums about the impact that earning a Drexel EDD has had on their professional practice, research, policy changes, and the larger society. Goodbye for now.